I call it the meatless sandwich, where you have the guy with his name on the door at the top, and then you have the younger staff members that are just coming in out of college, and all that knowledge base that was in the middle of that
is so well said.
Welcome, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
So as we say on this podcast show, The Art of Construction, find the pain and fix it. That's about what we're going to do here with SBSA, right, Kevin?
Yep, I think SBSA knows how to fix problems. That's their livelihood. So.
And they brought two of their top guns in here who, on the architect side, Brad Schmidt, and on the engineering side, Ryan Barnes. So really cool to talk about the engineering side and the architect side. Gold for our contractors and architects listening.
Well, you know, oftentimes you think of building and construction, it's really like putting a complex puzzle together. And if you don't put all the pieces together just in the right order and just in the right manner, there's going to be problems. And so that's one of the things that's so unique and so valuable, I think, about what they do is they provide builders as well as other consultants in the same arena, whether it be architects, engineers, and that kind of thing, an idea of a second opinion in terms of how to prevent these problems, and or if you get in the middle of a problem, how to solve it in the most productive manner.
Yeah, and as our motto at Mountain View is nothing but the best. So that's everything we do. And to be nothing but the best, you got to set yourself up for success, because problems doesn't mean how great it is. You got to make sure you're doing things right. We're going to dive into this show and talk about that. And I want to hear their side of it, because I just came back from the top 100 dealers in Anderson at Arizona. They brought us all in and had a three-day seminar. And it was, a lot of the talk was all about what Mountain View would call the logistics or the service install portion of that, and putting a lot of their marketing and technology efforts into doing it the right way and being hands-on instead of hands-off. And I just commend Anderson and the Architectural Collection that we're proud to be the showroom dealer and got put up on the podium with the best showroom in the nation. We're just honored to be that place for Anderson, and on this podcast show be able to spread that information out to everyone in the world about how Anderson is really leading on that part of it. And I think SBSA also is that at a local level, wouldn't you say?
No, absolutely. So
let's dive in and have a chat with Ryan Barnes, the forensic architectural engineer, and Bradley A. Schmidt, the Vice President of Architecture with SBSA. What's your favorite beverage?
Wow, I really like beer.
I'm a big fan of that as well. Yeah. It's nice to be in Colorado with all these craft beers, and a lot of people say that around here, so that's good stuff.
I like the microbrews.
Brad, what's your favorite place you traveled?
I'm a big fan of New Mexico, of all places, to be honest with you.
Which part are you? More Santa Fe or...
Santa Fe, Taos, both.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time in either place.
Cool. What's your favorite hobby?
I love to fish.
Cool.
I'm a big fisherman. Yeah.
Fly fishing, probably, in Colorado.
Fly fishing, do a lot of boating and so forth as well.
Cool. Good stuff. So this is a dual interview here in Studio MVWD. So we're going to start out by Bradley Schmidt, who's the Vice President of SBSA. Tell us a little bit about your role in the company SBSA, and then we're going to fire off the speed round. So you got to hear the questions, so you get to think a little bit about it, Ryan.
Thank you for having us here today. My name is Brad Schmidt. I'm an architect here in Colorado. I've been in this business now going on about 23 years. I've been with SBSA now for almost 4 years, and I'm in charge of the architectural department, Vice President of Architecture, and part of our task is not only doing new design, but we also are doing third-party peer reviews for other architects and contractors on their projects.
Bradley, you guys have kind of a unique name, so why don't you let our listeners know what SBSA stands for?
Yeah, SBSA is kind of an acronym that stands for Solutions Before, Solutions After. And you might ask, after what? And that tends to be issues regarding construction, whether it be construction defect issues or repairs after the fact if they've had problems with leakage or what have you. The solutions before side is the side that Ryan and I really specialize in, and that deals with, again, kind of taking lessons learned from the process of repair and or having gone through the litigation side of things and applying it back to new design whether it be our own new design work or whether it be helping other architects, find those issues that might become a problem for them later.
Cool. So you guys are partners in crime at SBSA. So, Ryan, what's your favorite beverage?
I think I'd have to agree with Brad.
Well, we'll all have to go toast to a beer someday. Right? We all like beer around here. Good stuff. And your favorite place you've traveled?
I love going to Southern California. A lot of friends out there. Have a great time. Usually get out there at least once a year.
Cool. And your favorite hobby?
Love to golf.
Golf. Golf and fish. Yeah.
Yeah. Got a foot of snow.
Yeah. Well, just wait 30 minutes, right? Cool. So Ryan Barnes, who's the forensic architectural engineer, tell us a little bit about your role, and you're teaming up with Brad, correct? You guys work correct. Together with correct. SBSA. So
I've been with the owner of SBSA for over 8 years now. I got my start in the SA side, which is the solutions after, getting into the litigation defect investigation, essentially gathering the evidence, going out, cutting open buildings that have known issues, identifying what the issues are and how to properly repair them, drafting expert reports for the owner of the company, who generally does most of the testifying. I've done a couple of stints in court, very interesting, getting grilled by a judge and cross-examined by other attorneys.
Sure.
So with all that knowledge that I gained in the first 5 or so years of my career, I've been able to apply that now to the solutions.
So it's safe to say, Brad, you're kind of the solutions before, and Ryan, you're kind of the solutions after, right?
I wouldn't say that, but I do still have a part in the solutions after side.
Okay.
Doing the defect work, the investigations, the performance testing of windows, fenestrations, to see if they're working properly.
Yeah, we actually both do. I've been called in to testify litigation clients as well, standard care issues, that sort of a thing. So,
yeah.
Brad, before we got started, you mentioned that you work on both sides, or at different times you work for both sides. So you're working on the plaintiff side, and then many times you're working on the defense side. So how does that work when you're working both sides of the aisle, if you will, there?
It's all about ethics. You just have to be honest and ethical about all of it. It's either right or it's not. And sometimes situations and circumstances that you find by going through the files that were made during construction by either the contractor or the architect, you can often decipher that perhaps it wasn't installed correctly, but there might have been some issues with sequencing or what have you. Like we say, it's either right or it's not. And if it's not, we don't twist the truth about it.
Sure.
You call it like it is.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, and that's what this podcast's all about. It's for the construction industry to really peel back the layers and bring problems to light. Because the whole idea is for our contractors and architects listening to this, we want to find the pain and fix it.
Right.
And that's one of the big messages that we say at Mountain View, and why I was really excited to have you guys into the studio, because that's really what you guys do, is you're setting up, you're trying to tee up contractors and architects to knock it out of the park. But if there is a problem, call a spade to fix it and get through that. And that's what I've researched, and your website's great. And how did you guys learn about the podcast or Mountain View to come into the studio?
We do quite a bit of presenting through AIA, American Institute of Architects. We also attend presentations. I have to for credit units for maintaining my membership in AIA as well as my state license. And so I met one of the gentlemen here who works here, Adam.
Yeah.
And he began to explain to me how you guys do this and asked us if we'd be interested. And it's like,
cool.
No, it's perfect.
Real. And that's really like, out on the streets, rubber meet the roads marketing. That's really how Mountain View, and that's why I wanted to ask that question. I'm glad you answered it that way, because if you go back and listen to some of the timeless shows, it's like Chris Armento we had in the studio is all about how to market and meeting people out at those events. You know, we're big into AIA and all those things. So Adam, who's my sales apprentice, and you got to talk about hiring the right people that fit your culture and all the things we talk about on this show. That's really cool that a lot of the guests have been, close friends of Devin's, or I know them. This is the first time I've seen you guys face-to-face, but the Mountain View family and the culture is spreading from talking through this microphone and people listening to this show to where Adam, who is my newest sales apprentice, is out spreading the culture and meeting you guys at networking events and coming in here to grow our business. So thanks for coming in and telling us your guys' story. Fire off a question for him, Kev.
Yeah, I was just curious. You know, I think, Brad, you and I talked on the phone a little bit about this. I was a builder in Nevada for a little over 10 years, and we were We were involved in three separate construction defect litigation cases. So I'm curious, what are you finding currently in Colorado? What are the biggest areas or the biggest failures? You know, the biggest single item or, you know, category that you're finding where contractors, architects, builders are having issues that ultimately end up in trouble.
Yeah, honestly, in my opinion, I think the biggest problem revolves around weather barriers and proper lapping techniques, proper sealants. Oftentimes, it's even the product selected and how it's applied to the project. You know, most manufacturers have got a plethora of information on their product that needs to be followed, and it needs to be followed specifically. And many times, I'll use the "we've done it this way for 30 years" mentality. You know, yeah, you may have been doing it that way, but you've been doing it wrong for 30 years, and that's unfortunate. But what we tend to do, especially when we're doing a peer review, and I'll let Ryan chime in on this because he looks at this stuff on a daily basis, but we're not there to beat you up. We're not there to hit you over the head and make you feel like you're dumb and you didn't do something correctly. We're literally there because we know where this can end up. And even something as small as a pinhole at the corner of a window, if it's not properly flashed, over the course of time and years, turns into a major problem. And it's something that only took 2 minutes if the guy would have taken the time that day to just do it properly.
One of the things that we talk about, and I experienced this when I was in building, that was one of our biggest challenges, was, you know, water penetration through windows, window openings, and water obviously travels. So you'll have a problem somewhere that try to source it back to the actual location sometimes can be a challenge. You have to do a pretty good amount of destruction.
Yeah, and I think to piggyback on where we're seeing the most issues is where two trades interface and how to coordinate the sequencing of the installation of materials. You may have one guy have to do a portion of his work, another sub comes on with their component, the other guy needs to come back to finish his portion. It's a challenge for the general contractors. So being able to, through the peer review, identify these critical interfaces of components or where these subcontractors are going to overlap, identifying those early and helping the contractor see that he needs to be able to sequence these in such a way that everything gets put in a proper manner.
And I'll jump in on that to say nothing beats doing a mock-up on a project.
And having the right tools for that mock-up,
exactly.
Right? So I would love to tell a story. As we were just awarded the best showroom in the nation 2 weeks ago at Anderson's dealer rally. So there's their top 100 dealers, and Mountain View was honored to get the best showroom in the nation. And it was a three-day seminar, and Anderson has chose to pull out of the IBS show and the big full-scale deals and really less, more committed dealers is their approach. And that's the same deal that we're talking about on this podcast, is we're looking for the right people that want to do it right, and we're here to support you and do that. So some of the really cool things Anderson has recognized, that is, you said the key thing I heard you say is that the manufacturers have a plethora of stuff to, quite frankly, a lot of it is CYA out there. And then the guy where the rubber meets the road is this, here's this 100-page manual to install every one of our windows every which way, and then the trades putting trim and this pointing the finger and all this stuff going on. Well, most of your window manufacturers have made in the past have made this huge, big brochure or hundreds of pages that find all the right stuff that covers that pinhole or whatever the situation is in the courtroom. And they've kept an arm's reach to where we're just supplying the windows and staying out of that. Well, Anderson has recognized that's where it's going, is you get brought into the party anyway, as the Mountain View, as the Anderson, as the SBSA. It's all, we're all in this together. So instead of everybody pointing the finger in an arm's reach, what we're taking the approach is have this podcast show and find the right tools. So what we're doing is we're 3D rendering installation videos and the stuff to where if it's a brick return retrofit situation, the installation video and instructions you can pull just for that specific thing and then break it down to the Anderson family of brands for a clad wood window versus a vinyl window with this rigid nail fin or that. So we're putting this library together to really set everybody up to success, because you got to have those right tools on the front end. So that's one of the brand new things that they just released at the dealer rally, that Mountain View and people like SBSA were all working together to be the front of the curve. So that's really cool stuff where we're going to, like you said, we're not here to cut everybody down. We're here to bring everybody up and make it successful. And that's what we're all in this room here to do.
And I think the best way to put it is we're here to help you do it. Like Brad said, we're not here to beat you up, but you know, maybe you're not as comfortable with detailing a certain aspect of the building. We're there to help you, whether we're hired by the developer, the contractor, or the architect. We're there as a team. We promote team meetings, pre-construction meetings, review the drawings. Does anybody have any questions? Hey, Ryan, why did you suggest to do it this way? And then I can explain to them, this is the reason. It's funny, you know, we get hired by, say, a developer, and we're on the job. The contractor really likes and sees the value that we bring to the table. Later on down the month, they want to hire us for their next job, which is great. People see the value, and ultimately, like I said, we want to help you do it right. We want to build good buildings. We want to keep people out of trouble.
And from the architect's point of view, you know, being an architect myself and being
You're an architect?
Yeah.
Wow. You're really outgoing. You do have the glasses. I'll give you that. Just kidding, architects. We love you guys.
Well, with that said, from being an architect and understanding the process of a typical design scenario, how things work, I mean, obviously we now have Revit, and that's kind of been the latest and greatest tool for architects to use, but it's still just a tool. And you can make it look as great as you want in three dimensions and have the renderings and it all looks fantastic. It still boils down to those details. And unfortunately, you know, with the economy changes over the last 5-6 years, you know, many of the architects that have the really high quality experience and knowledge in detailing things have been kind of pushed aside. Younger crowd is moving in and they're losing something in this. I call it the meatless sandwich, where you have the guy with his name on the door at the top, and then you have the younger staff members that are just coming in out of college, and all that knowledge base that was in the middle of that
is
pushed out. And so what we're trying to do as a company is to be there as a resource for companies that have gone through this, and they're recognizing that, you know, we really do need somebody who understands these components completely. And again, I don't want to disparage younger people out there in the architectural industry, but it takes a while. And you can't just do it by drawing it up in a three-dimensional model and expecting the computer to figure out all of your interchanges of materials and so forth.
Yeah. So how do you get from the bottom layer of the sandwich to your name on the wall, right? A big thing we're always talking about is the right way to networking. You know, we're out, you guys are putting on a presentation, giving credibility, coming into the podcast, and then people like Mountain View, Anderson and Mountain View is paying 100% of the bill. In June, we're taking 12 architects from Colorado in conjunction with the Mirror Gallery, who's the biggest Anderson dealer in Texas, who's bringing 24 architects back to Bayport, and we're flying them in, taking them to a Twins game, and then we're going to go tour the Cardinal glass plant with all the state-of-the-art glass to learn, and then we're taking them to the Anderson R&D facility where we're going to put on a test wall and show how a window gets installed the right way, and then we're going to do that pinhole and show how it passes and it fails. So architects can that are coming in on the front end or their name on the building that may have never done that, my call to action on this show is we're looking for 12 of the best architects that get it and want Mountain View and Anderson to pay the bill, and we're going to do this on a yearly basis to really educate the architects on the front end. And, of course, show them why Anderson is the best window out there in the market,
right?
Did
I mention that I'm an architect?
So we'll talk about that some more.
I wanted to quickly touch on something that Ryan mentioned, or kind of in a category, not the specific description, but you were talking about people see the value up front, the solutions before side. And I just wanted to touch on that because we've always talked on this show, whether it be with, you know, contractors or specific tradespeople, is that it's a lot cheaper to spend a little extra time up front getting things right than it is to go move forward and then realize you have a problem, tear it out, whatever that may be, and go back and fix it at that point. So I presume that's kind of what you were talking about when you mentioned that people see the value in what you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as Brad touched on, the importance of a mock-up. We had a job recently where they chose not to do a mock-up. Now we've been hired by this developer once again. They're going to do a mock-up on the next job because they had issues where they needed to tear down pretty much the weather barrier on an entire building because the windows were flashed incorrectly. A lot of these issues could have been fleshed out with doing a mock-up. Do it right early. You've got your mock-up. You can do it so you're sectioning your materials so you can see the layering. You can show it to your subs, and you can hold them to that standard.
Now, what kind of a mock-up are you talking about? Are you talking about some sort of a video?
Full-size mock-up on the site. And it can be on the building.
Okay.
It could be, hey, the first deck or the first corner. I like to see them build a wall.
Right.
I've seen on some of my newer jobs, they're doing two-story mock-ups.
The right suppliers want to be involved in that. Again, at this dealer rally I was just talking about, we had a whole breakout session on our new commercial division. Joel Pullman at Anderson's leading that up, and we have a local rep, Steve Rawlings, in Mountain View, is working with them to where we will help pay, you know, for that window and the mock-up and work through the front end. We know we're setting ourselves up for success. So contractors and architects listening to this, you have suppliers and people that all want to take that mock-up and will gladly take that on and earn the business and show everyone how to do it the right way, because we want to, for lack of a better term, CYA ourselves the right way up front versus a bunch of paperwork that hopefully in court you minimizes how much you spend, right?
Well, litigation is no fun.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, it is not a fun process.
So yeah, this peer review process. So we do the red lines. I review the drawings, the specs. I write a supplemental report that they can review, put in their file. And then it really is up to the designer of record what changes or suggestions they want to take on. Once they do that, they'll finalize their set. And then when they start construction, I'm out there doing quality assurance observations. So I'm seeing things that may or may not be being done correctly. Lots of times they're doing things right, and I'll put that in the report.
You'll see the flashing that's wrong before they cover it up.
Yes.
Exactly. So being there, boots on the ground, you know, and when I'm walking the site, I bring the superintendent. I try to educate him, you know. Hey, this is why I like to see it done this way. Hey, the architect doesn't have a detail for this. Maybe we should ask him for one. Things of that nature.
Great. But yeah, then you have the architects in-house to create that detail correctly.
We do, but the key factor here is that we're not architect of record on a project like that.
Sure.
So we can advise, we can make recommendations, suggestions on how to do it correctly, but ultimately the architect of record, who has the responsibility because it's their stamp on those drawings, they're the ones that need to go ahead and produce that. We're happy to have them shoot it back over to us and say, is this what you were talking about? What do you think? And, you know, make it a collaborative effort. Architects love the word collaboration. Cool. I don't know if you mean that.
Because it's like we have to, Anderson works off of DP rating, design pressure ratings, and a lot of architects, we say that, and they'll talk, air and wind and all these infiltration terms, and with the code on, poor architects with these books that the code changes, we say, we need your engineer architect to do this. And a lot of times, they don't even know what
right.
I'm asking for. And that's such a key detail on these projects.
You mentioned those DP ratings. We have those happen a lot in litigation where you get above a certain level and suddenly those things show up.
They start to fail.
Yeah, and the end zones and the mid zones and all these things that it's like every one of these projects, it's all about bells and whistles and bottom line and price on all these big projects. I have three of them right now. Like this week, Anderson, we have the price increase. So it's like you let them know that the price, then all of a sudden it's like, well, we got to get these ordered. But what about the laundry list of use? No one's still giving me a DP rating. If you can plan that stuff up front and get all that done, get the mock-up ordered up front, get all that, it saves everybody so much headaches getting it done right early and often.
And one of the things we want to emphasize is that for us, we appreciate being brought in earlier than later. If we can get into a project with the architects, helping them out during design development, then the questions of DP ratings, when that comes across their desk and they're unsure and they don't know, they can give us a call.
Sure.
They can ask us. We'll help them out.
So do you have like a consulting, just a fee? If, for instance, if Mountain View says SBSA, this product, they can't produce a DP rating. Could I bring you guys in and say, hey, they will facilitate at a certain amount of hours or a dollar an hour? How do you guys work in that role?
We do it in a couple different ways. It kind of depends on project size and complexity. We prefer to see a set of preliminary drawings up front to be able to kind of put our eyes on what we think it'll take in terms of time. You know, we've gone hourly to a not-to-exceed amount for some clients.
Okay.
For other clients, they really want it as part of their overall budget for the project. We even have some architects that keep us on call, and what they've started to do is, without even announcing it to anybody, they keep a set amount of money of their own fee as part of the
that's genius.
On-call, yeah, back
that's,
and forth.
Well, It's protection. It's insurance.
That's the cheapest insurance you can get.
And for us, I like it because I'll get two or three emails in a week from this architect, and she'll have a few questions. They're not difficult, but they're in the process while she's trying to design it, trying to make sure she's hitting on all the things that are important. And for her, it's kind of like a little insurance policy.
Absolutely.
She feels more comfortable knowing that she's got us kind of on her shoulder whispering to her what she really needs to
do. Yeah, and we're always talking the show is timeless and global, but giving real-world stories and examples for us here in Colorado working together. As I've scaled my business, and the bigger we get, the more focused and smaller of what we do is, and do it really well. Architects and contractors, I'm always talking to them on a daily basis through the microphone or in person, and they're always trying to do everything themselves. And if they would save so much more money than trying to 100% be up on the code book and all this stuff, focus on their part of the project really well and design it really well. If they want to have their name on the top of the sandwich or filter it to someone at the bottom, you guys help with the meat in the middle. And they're all, and until they have the right person for that meat, you guys could be that crutch, if you will, right?
That's why we're here doing what we're doing.
Cool, that's great.
Yeah, I'm curious about one thing. When you talk about the solutions before, how much are you seeing, or how much do you utilize video? And the reason I'm asking is that Devin and I were on a job site recently where we talked to the contractor about the window installation, and he was saying that they finally, to get over the language gap, they started showing these guys YouTube videos in terms of how to properly install the flashing on the windows. And he said, amazingly, to his surprise, when he came back and back-checked their work, it was dead-on perfect.
So I'm because just curious, most of them couldn't speak English.
Correct. Or they don't like to read, even if they can speak English. So I'm just wondering, you know, we all understand the power of video and TV and that kind of thing. When you're looking at the solutions before, do you incorporate that at all in what you're doing with architects?
To this level, we haven't, quite honestly. We try to be most efficient with our time in redlining the architect's drawings, giving them a full report, and then on the flip side of it, during the observations, making sure that we're very thorough in the field. We're taking photographs. Every report comes with photographs as part of the process. Owners like it because it documents things as they're going along, but we've also gone about doing things where we'll do a pre-installation conference with the subcontractors, and Ryan will go out and, you know, literally have the guys there that are supposed to be doing it. The one problem that we run into is that, like any job, the sub might be there for 3 months, but then half his crew gets pulled off because they're going to another job. Well, all the guys that you put all this mind training into,
they're not there anymore,
and they didn't necessarily pass on the information.
We have that same problem. That's why the videos, and I'm working with Anderson to where on the window stickers we have a QR code. So if the super on the job is running it right and someone new comes on the job and has not done that, you know, Anderson literally just on his, I have a tablet there and click the QR code for that exact window, and the person says, you watch this 5-minute video before you install this window. What a great way to protect everybody.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's something we're working on as well. I have another question that kind of backtracking from, you said you're an architect and you said you got a continued education. So with our trip, we're getting 10 hours of continued education for doing the Cardinal plant and all this stuff that we're setting up. How does that work as far as how a year for contractors and suppliers listening to this show? How does to be an architect, how many continuing education classes do you need to take and how often in that? Just give us that
laid out.
Yeah,
there's categories. Health, safety, welfare is one of the major ones. Teen range. Honestly, it's changed in the last few years. I keep up with it just... I don't even bother worrying about the number. I just try to make sure I do enough all year long to where if I'm ever audited, I have the paperwork to show that I've taken these things.
Gotcha.
And made sure that it's in.
So it's more of it's a self-awareness and it's an audited, like taxes, you do it, you're right, until someone may check on you if you're
it's
not on the game.
It's self-policing, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, you do need to keep up with it if they do call you out on it.
What's some of the best classes you've done as an architect?
Honestly, I really do appreciate going to factories, seeing things, how they're being put together, especially when it comes to materials, cladding materials, and so forth. It's important for us to not only understand the process of how it's put together, but, you know, for example, if it's a siding material, what are the key ingredients of that would start to lend the product to having potential issues for moisture failure and that sort of a thing. So being able to see it firsthand, understand the process by which it's being made, is a very important part of what we do. You know, we often go to other seminars that do show proper technique. We're like anyone else. We have to stay on top of things, kind of cutting edge. If we're going to be making suggestions to other industry professionals, we better know how it's done correctly in the first place.
So architects listening to this, as an architect, you see a lot of value in us putting the efforts and bringing people back to manufacturing facilities and really solidifying the relationships to where, you know, Devin and Brad really know each other and trust each other and are sending out products and speccing the right products to set us up for success and seeing it firsthand together.
Well,
right?
As you were saying, how does one come into architecture as a young individual and learn your way up? There's no better way than through education. And you're not continuing on through college to get it necessarily, but you still have to apply yourself in the industry in ways that you actually pick up on the correct applications and methods for doing things.
Awesome.
And that's really the best way, in my opinion, to do it, is to discuss it with the product representatives, product manufacturers, find out from them what their intentions are for their product so that you can ensure that as you're specifying it, you know what you're looking out for, you know how to detail it properly, because that's really what keeps the warranties intact. You know, companies often will step away from something if they see that it wasn't installed according to their way of doing it.
And that's fair to them. But that's the part that I like, how Anderson is not just keeping an arm's reach. They're jumping in, and the reason they want to keep an arm's reach is to protect themselves. The more you get, the more you put out there and help and be involved, the more you get brought into the party. But it's all about relationships at the end of the day. You know, you buy from the people, the products you like and trust. And that's what Anderson and Mountain View is really working with and our other products that we bring into the fold.
Do you get involved in all aspects? I'm thinking as an example of soils engineering when it gets into structural issues. So you're then taking all aspects of construction. Doesn't matter whether it's architecture, building, the infrastructure beforehand. You get involved in looking at...
Right now, the peer review side of work is mainly concentrated on building envelope issues.
Mm-hmm.
Roof, walls, fenestrations, waterproofing, decks, below grade. We've also done a few ADA reviews. But we have in-house structural engineers, civil engineers, architects, reserve specialists, construction specialists. So we have the capability to look at structural, to look at your geotech report, your soils, the grading. Civil is actually a big issue in the litigation side. You wouldn't believe how many times that gets... Most of the time it's grading issues.
Compact, you know, whether there was proper compacting or use of materials.
Grading away from the building properly.
Right.
You know,
retaining walls.
Water needs to run away from the building.
Exactly.
Yeah, water does run downhill. So you want your hill to be pointed in the right direction away from your building.
Yeah, you would think that would be common sense. I can remember when we were building, we would run into issues. Sometimes we would catch them before. Unfortunately, sometimes you catch them later than you would like, which is, you know, like on roofing, they would put the valley gutter upside down, the flashing. And it's like, well, what was anybody thinking with that, right? Just like you said, water does run downhill, so you don't put the grating to run into the foundation.
Well, that's the lapping issue that I was talking about with weather barriers. You know, we often talk about it being like a shower curtain. Which side of the tub are you putting your shower curtain on? You put it on the outside, your water's not going where you want it to.
Yeah.
So it's
simple, but there's like you, but you nailed it when you said there's so many different trades overlapping that to make the whole shower pan work properly, it's not just one person doing it. It's the tile running in and the shower pan and
that's the challenge for the general contractor.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
But that's where you guys come in and look at all the parts, both on paper and the front end, mm-hmm. and then in the field, say, your two subs are not on the same page here.
Exactly.
That's a phenomenal service. So what's the biggest thing that's brought you into the courtroom?
The times I've been there, it was for litigation cases. I wasn't the expert witness. This was early on in my career, so I was the fact witness. And you just go up and you tell them what you got. You know, you're not making up stories. You know, this is what I saw. This is what's in the report. Ask me anything you want.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy it. I remember my first case, we were a plaintiff, questioned by our attorney, and then I got cross-examined by the defense attorney. Turns out the defense attorney was one of my friends growing up, his father. So I knew the guy. It was unbelievable. He gave me great kudos afterwards. He thought I did a good job, was calm and collected on the stand. So I like it. As I've learned all I have on that solutions after side through that work, I really want to help people do it right the first time. So that's where my passion is now, and that's why I've been putting a lot of my efforts towards the solutions before.
Cool. What's getting it to the find the biggest pain and fix it?
You know, oftentimes it's application of specific materials.
Okay.
The four-letter word called EIFS in this area, at one point, obviously, with Barrett EIFS systems, they became a huge national problem.
For the people that don't know what EIFS, what does EIFS stand for?
It's Exterior Insulation Finish System. Some people call it synthetic stucco. Essentially, it's a rigid insulation board that gets put on your sheet surface. Then you come back with the lamina, which consists of a cementitious base coat, fiberglass reinforcing mesh embedded within it, and then generally an acrylic top coat.
Okay.
So it's similar to stucco. I recall in my career a point where the firm I was working for at the time made a decree that no one will ever use this product again on any project, in any design, at all. And it had to do with your liability insurance. The product has come a long way over the years. The barrier systems are no longer allowed in Type 5 wood frame construction. And, you know, companies have gone to the extra efforts of making sure that they have a drainable system involved now. What we're seeing now with the energy codes and the requirements for external insulation on buildings, it really is a good product to consider. And yet we're still fighting the issues with insurance companies not wanting to insure that product in a construction situation. So, you know, we're proponents of it for a number of reasons.
So again, what's that? What's the new product you're recommending?
It's considered a water managed system.
Water managed system. Okay.
When moisture penetrates the front outer face, the color face, if you will,
the rain screen or whatever.
When water penetrates that and gets back to the surface of your sheathing, you need to have a weather barrier back there that is able to, you know, prevent water from continuing.
More of the beauty cap or something does not. That's not the first. That's just more for looks behind the scenes is what does the weather. Okay.
So as water penetrates through this system and reaches that sheathing at the back, the foam board that we were discussing will either be grooved or the adhesive that it's put on with will be done with a grooved trowel vertically so that moisture can be pulled through gravity vertically down. And then at the base, there's a plastic screed that's
like a pan.
Yeah, like a pan, like a drip flashing, and it allows the moisture to drip out the bottom. So the water is not held within that foam and allowed to continue to cause damage to the building. One of the things that architects have done in response to all of this litigation against this product is to switch to stucco. And what we've started to see now with the energy codes requiring foam on the outside of the building, and architects having gone to the mindset of a hard coat stucco system, they're putting the stucco over the foam against the building, and all of a sudden you have what we would deem a barrier EIFS system all over again, unintentionally this time. But detailing those things properly, if you're going to use a stucco system, you really start to have to look at what the energy code requirements are and how those systems need to come together so that you maintain proper drainage all the way through. We've seen it on just about every project we've looked at in the past 2 years now, and it's
seen what?
Seen the use of a hard coat stucco system going over a foam insulation material on the outside of the building.
Okay.
So again, it's
and we're setting ourselves up for problems there. Right now, windows and they say there's water coming in the house. Well, it could be coming from so many different places. And how do you find that right and fix it? What do you guys recommend? Infrared cameras, and then you got to cut it out and.
And I think, you know, just back to the hot, I call the stucco over the rigid foam, I call it a hybrid system.
Okay.
Because it's kind of like EIFS, but it's also got stucco on it. It brings a lot of challenges. Now your lath is penetrating through an inch or two of rigid insulation board, so your fasteners need to be able to hold the shear load and that cantilevered load on each of those. So, you know, larger fasteners. I always look to manufacturers for their recommendation with their system because they're ultimately going to warrant it. But if you have a proper weather-resistant barrier application, properly integrated with weep mechanisms so that water can be discharged from the system at any horizontal termination, the systems will work.
And back to your point with Windows, obviously every manufacturer's got their preferred method for window flashing and so forth. And those flashings are, again, once again, a key element in any cladding that you're going to do around them. And so you mentioned...
Yeah, windows, hose bibs, yeah, HVAC.
Exactly.
I mean, not just any hole in the structure.
Right, right. And we do use infrared technology. The owner of our company is level 2.
Level 2. I'm certified as well.
Right. Infrared camera usage. And able to go out and see fluctuations in the temperature with that camera and determine, you know, where
what's
water
wrong,
is.
Yeah.
Now, typically, if you've got a leak in a window, the infrared camera, you don't really need it. You know you got the leak.
Well, but if there's water, the customer says, we bought these new windows from you, and then there's water coming in 2 foot above the window. That's where the drywall rot starts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's probably not your window and the weather barrier. It's somewhere else.
Yeah,
they may have got a new roof at the same time, and it's coming in. I mean, that's where infrared can really be helpful, right?
And we verify things through the intrusive testing process, this destructive testing, however you want to call it, where we'll come out and, you know, cut away and get back to the issue and find out what is causing that problem and then design a repair around that. So that's also another aspect of what we do at
cool.
SPSA.
What would you say this year was the most challenging project you worked on? And you don't have to name names. We're just really looking for concepts and things that you came across. Yeah, exactly.
I'd say one of the most challenging ones, I've had a couple. I gave you the example earlier about where we had to tear off weather barrier on an entire building.
Yeah, that's pretty serious.
Yeah. We've been through multiple, I want to say they've probably had 4 or 5 different subcontractors. So, like we were talking about training people at the beginning, we did a mock-up there. And on the mock-up, I went out there one day and I go, well, where's the window? Well, imagine that the window's there. And I said, this isn't a mock-up. And they kind of just let it go by the wayside. They didn't really take the mock-up seriously. And then this first building is where we had all the issues. So we finally get it corrected, and then they get a different sub or a different crew because they're pulling their guys to another job. And then we got to teach them all over again. So... it's been a challenge, but like I told you earlier there, I'm there to help. I love to help. I want to see things done correctly.
Great.
So that in particular is probably one of my most challenging jobs this year.
What do you see as the most important ingredient or the most important person within a job? Is it the project superintendent?
Superintendent.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely.
So,
the guy with the boots on the ground.
Yep. What was the most successful project that you did this year, guys, or What project was it that you got the most kind of benefit out of your services that you provided that client?
I would say one of the best projects we have going right now is actually under construction.
Okay.
That we're currently working on. It's a repeat client in terms of the contractor. They've been sold on our services for a while now, and they have brought us to the table as, you know, we recommend these guys, you know. And so we appreciate that. We've built a very good rapport with them. It's a high-rise apartment building right now that they're putting up. And they have had numerous times, we've had to write kudos to them in an email to say, you guys are really doing this right. And we appreciate that. From our point of view, we've had the ones where they ignore what we say, or we feel like we're just a checkbox on their list of things that they have to do. And we don't want to be the checkbox. That's not why we're doing this. It's not so that they can tell their insurance company, yes, we had it reviewed. It really boils down to a partnership. And at the end of the day, they need to feel like they got value out of our services, and we need to feel like they took us seriously, because what we don't want is to see something happen down the road where our name is now on it as having looked at it. We've touched the drawings. We've reviewed things. Granted, we keep our records pretty tight so that if there ever is a problem, we're able to show that we did the reviews properly and we were looking at things along the way. But you can't force the situation with owners and contractors, specifically owners. If they decide they don't want to do something because of cost, then they're not going to do it.
Right.
We do a cover ourselves sort of a notation to things to make sure that that doesn't become an issue for us.
Well, yeah, and it's really everybody that we have in the show, everybody wants to do it right, you know, and it's not just to have that pretty picture and sell it as make as much money as you can today. It's down the road, SBSA and the Art of Construction and all these people working together, 10 years from now, we want to look at that building and say it's still performing really well with the contractor and the architect and everybody that teamed up together, did it right, got the next project, and the last one we're not out fixing, right?
That's our goal. Well,
one of the things we talk about a lot on this show is, you know, whether you pay now or you pay later because you're going to pay. And, Ryan, what you described earlier, I would imagine that, the cost of changing that entire building envelope was probably more than the combination of your fee and whatever other mitigation up front there would have been required to get it done properly.
I would completely agree.
Okay.
and on that challenging project, we were hired by one entity, and then there was a bunch of developers involved, and the developer on that project saw what we were doing, saw what we were catching, and they ended up hiring us for 3 more jobs.
Cool. So, yeah. So you're growing, huh?
Right? Yeah, we are. It is growing. Word of mouth is coming along very well for us. To get back to your point about pay us now or pay us later mentality, I will say this, that our fee, usually, what we charge to do mm-hmm. something, if you end up in a lawsuit, you will spend our fee amount within the first 2 weeks with your attorney.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, no question.
And that's just the first 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. Right. So it really is kind of banking ahead on your project to make sure that you avoid the ugliness of what...
Well, and I can talk, too, from a personal experience, and that is that a lot of time people think that your insurance is going to take care of that. And, yeah, many times they will be involved, but we had to sue our own insurance company to keep them involved, and you're still paying, you know, ridiculous fees, and your rates are going to go up. Guaranteed.
And,
no question about that.
You know, as a designer, the last thing you want is to have your name attached to a project that you spend all this time and effort to make it a beautiful job, and it turns into a litigation situation. And this is a very small town, and all it takes is a few cocktail parties,
yeah.
and suddenly your name is being smeared all over town because you didn't think of, you know, problem X.
Yeah, wherever you are. So I think we've definitely planted the seed that SBSA is a key ingredient wherever you are. You find your SBSA, and we found ours here in Colorado, and honored to have you guys in the studio. Any closing things you guys want to put out there for our guests listening?
We appreciate the opportunity, again, to step into a situation with you guys, specifically around window products. Again, that's one of the main components in a building that we come across, that installation is a huge part of it. Product is a huge part of it, and we just want to make sure that everybody out there understands that, again, we're here to help you. We're not here to judge you, and we'll do everything we can to make your next project a good one.
Yeah, so you're either growing or you're dying, and I would say, Brad, as he says, the best way to grow is through education, and that's what this show in Mountain View and SBSA is all about. So they'll have a specialized page on the message board on our podcast website, so reach out to them if you want to reach out and get a bid or get information. They're happy to help, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Devin, we always talk about this, and I hate to beat a dead horse, but we talk frequently about two things. One is, do you want to pay now or do you want to pay later? And the second thing is, it's always cheaper and more efficient to fix problems on paper before they actually appear. And boy, did they describe that in spades, don't you think?
I love how they're so passionate about solutions before, but they're also going to help you with solutions after. But everybody, if you get the right people on the bus, they want to set you all up for success, right? And that's
Absolutely.
What SBSA is all about.
Well, and I think it's really critical to think about. One of the things that they mentioned was the most critical component in most projects is that project superintendent. But that's one individual. You think about it. If you're building an apartment building with 1,000 units, that project superintendent, even if he's got assistants, which they probably would in that case, are not going to be able to be everywhere all the time. So it's a whole team collaborative effort. You need to understand where the potential problems can occur and how to address that up front to try to prevent that.
And I'm always talking about culture with my Mountain View family, and they help drive the culture to do it the right way. You know, they talked a lot about how the mind training, but then the subs go on to the next job and you get a whole new batch and they're not doing it the right way. It's all about getting the right culture on your job to where everybody that steps on that job site wants to do it the right way. And pay now, pay later, paper, whatever this, like they talked about, litigation is ugly. There's no good deal for that. And that's what we're on this podcast. Our hope is that the show is going to grow And when you're listening to this show, this helps avoid litigation. And the people we're bringing on, and hopefully you're getting a lot of marketing gold to where your company's growing and not growing by spending all your profits in the litigation courtroom.
Well, that plus, I think most people that are in the building industry like to build because they like seeing a good finished product. I don't think anybody goes in with the idea that they're going to create problems, but problems do occur. So what they allow you to do is to focus really at the end of the day on the things that you like most. But if you don't pay attention up front, those things are going to come up. You can't ignore them. But if you do this up front, get it, you know, get a process going where you can alleviate problems, then you can focus on the real cool stuff, the fun stuff, and the finished product with a great project as the result.
And how these shows tied together, you know, we gave them the tour of our best showroom in the nation. I've said that a few times now.
Yeah,
pretty proud of that. We have an education center here, and they are all about teaming up with us and finding your industry partners to educate. That's the best way to grow your business the right way. And find people that build your culture together. And we're going to be doing events with SBSA here, showing the right way and to protect. So when you're listening to this contractor and architect, we want you to listen to this show. But then when we have these events, we want you to get involved. If you're in Colorado with the Mountain View culture, wherever you're listening to this, get involved like Chris Armenta talked through HBA or organizations like that, to grow your business in CYA the right way.
Absolutely, because it's time well spent, and whatever money is involved will be much less by getting involved sooner rather than later, no question.
And at the end of the day, it's all about having more fun, do what you love to do, and sleep at night. If you have a company like SBSA to redline and go over all that stuff before you just say, building department, go, what a nice peace of mind weight off your shoulders to have someone, you know, hand in hand with you on that. So reach out to them on the message board and use a company like that. They are very knowledgeable and are out at events, and what a great company.
Well, and one of the things they touched on, not a lot, but it's the other side of the equation. It's not just the money, but the time that's going to be lost in litigation, the pain and suffering. And it's a pain in the neck. I mean, it will take your eyeballs off of your other projects and being able to continue to grow, you know, so it's critically important from the standpoint of cost as well as your time spent.
And you're always talking about back when you were a contractor in the litigation, that was probably the part that built you up but also made you leave and do something else, right?
Yeah, because, you know, you get to a point where it's tough to manage, and we had a lot of ways to mitigate things up front, but it still can hit you, and it's just not a fun process.
So use Kevin as a resource. I mean, he's been through the trenches, and now he has all these industry partners here in Colorado to work through. So toot your horn, Kevin, man.
Absolutely.
You are set up for success, right? You got a lot of projects out there, and really kicking butt, get that hip healed, and get out and rock and roll, right?
Absolutely.
All right, another great show. Thanks for listening, and look forward to your feedback and comments on the message board to keep growing the show. For you, contractor and architect, stay out of that courtroom and have more fun.
We'll see you soon.
You have been listening to The Art of Construction. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.